What we're seeing, Damon, is the shift from the hustle to the flow.
The most effective leaders, at least once a day, have a reflective practice.
Any of the listeners who are hesitant about reaching out for support, the only way you can grow and learn.
Are you stuck in leadership patterns that leave you drained and disconnected? The solution isn't working harder, it's leading differently. Our guest today will show you how to shift from hustle to flow, breaking free from burnout and becoming more present and an impactful leader. Welcome to the Learn It All podcast, the show for today's leaders who want to get ahead and stay ahead because we believe that great leaders aren't born or made, they're constantly in the making. I'm your host, Damon Lemby, two-time best-selling author and CEO of Learn It, a live learning platform that has helped upskill over 2 million people over the past 3 decades. Today, I'll be talking with Bodhi Aldridge, a visionary leadership coach who guides leaders worldwide on their quest to find their true freedom, helping them uncover their inner magnificence and achieve profound impact. I'll be asking Bodhi to share his insights on balancing masculine and feminine energies in leadership, creating psychological safety through compassion, and why the secret to better leadership starts with 5 minutes of daily reflection. So there's been a lot of focus, rightfully so, on empowering women in leadership, and it's very necessary. But what do you feel is crucial about addressing the unique challenges that males have when it comes to leadership?
Yeah. As you know, it's a topic that I do a lot of work in, and I agree. I feel, you know, this imbalance has occurred, and empowering women, empowering the feminine energy in all of us has been important. And what I notice is that a lot of men, and again, you know, we can talk about gender and masculine, feminine energy if we get a chance, but a lot of men have kind of got a little bit lost. And if we look at it in the workplace, we look at their careers, their trajectory, it's kind of because the sand shifted a lot and they're wanting to find their place, how to show up fully as a leader. And that's a lot of the work I do. I feel it's really important to get this balance right.
And what inspired you to get involved in this type of work?
I think one of the big shifts, you know, having done this work, you know, I was originally an attorney for 20 years. And then I leant into leadership coaching and been doing that around the globe for over 20 years. But one of the big shifts I saw when COVID hit was I saw a lot of men reaching out to get coaching from me who were struggling, you know, who were struggling with their role, struggling with their identity and struggling with their leadership. And so that really amplified my desire to support men in particular, obviously work with women as well, with teens. And yeah, I think if you look at it, a lot of men feel very isolated. A lot of men feel they've got to do it alone. A lot of men think they're the only one going through it. You know, all the classic stereotypical diagnosis of, men 35 to 50. And when they realize they can get support, when they realize there's a different way, everything shifts for them.
Speaking about the challenges that you were seeing, the struggles that men were going through during COVID, can you give me an example of what that was like? And has that shifted at all since over the last 4 or 5 years?
Well, the biggest thing I noticed, and I think the stats agree globally, if you're working, particularly if you're working in corporate, even if you're a founder and an entrepreneur, what we see is the biggest challenge for women is adrenal fatigue. So, you know, particularly women in the late 30s, 40s, the model for the feminine has to go hard, go hard, go hard. Often they're juggling many, many different things. And literally their adrenals start to give up. The challenge for men was more mental health, because often men compartmentalize, often, you know, aren't sure how to share their emotions and things, anxiety, depression, all of those things. So that was what was presenting more and more, you know, for men as a generalization. I feel, you know, we know that COVID was a catalyst for change and choice. We also know that a lot of organizations have reverted back to the old model. So I would say there are green shoots of change in leadership, whether it's organizational, whether it's individual. And I feel more and more men are realizing is there is a different way. There is a different way I can show up. I can be a leader. I can be a father, husband, whatever that might be.
What do you think are the two keys to leadership?
Yeah, to me, having, you know, worked in this space for a long time, the simple definition of leadership for me is influence. Yeah, if you think about formal leadership or informal leadership, essentially a leader is influencing the system, whether it's a family system, whether it's a community system, whether it's a business. And what we know in the studies are clear that the two keys to leadership are connection and direction. Working with many, many organizations, if you do any staff engagement, any retention, feedback forms or whatever, the most satisfied teams say, I feel a connection with my line manager, with my VP, with the organization, and I'm really clear on my direction. I'm really clear on the expectations. And for any aspiring leader, if you can really understand that connection starts with connection with self, you've got to be willing to get to know yourself, to get present with yourself. Yep, and really be clear on your direction, and then really be pristine with your communication. One of the biggest feedbacks I hear from teams and staff is that the goalposts keep moving all the time because nobody's really communicating the expectations. And that's why this setup, I often say busyness is laziness. If you're running the busy model and you've got downward pressure from senior C-suite, you've got upward pressure from your team, and you're trying to do it through the busy model, yet something will give. Your adrenal fatigue, your mental health, your relationships, there is another way. And that's a big part of what I teach, how to navigate leadership, how to navigate entrepreneur. What we're seeing, Damon, is the shift from the hustle to the flow. And it's entirely in your hands if you're willing to lean in.
Can you go a little deeper on that? Explain to me, what is the difference between the hustle and the flow?
Fundamentally, the model we've all seen, and certainly my generation, is that to get ahead, it's all about the hustle. It's all about the push. It's all about working the angles. It's all about climbing the tree. It's all about, I've got to do this, got to do that, got to get the VC money, whatever it might be. And, that's been the pervasive paradigm that most people have experienced, and it's exhausting. And a certain percentage get there and a certain percentage, it comes at a cost. Now, what we know is that, and there's been lots of studies, obviously, the last 15 years around flow states in sport. And what they've identified is that energetically, you can find a different way to experience the day. And there's essentially some simple tools which I teach around embodied presence, where you can start to recalibrate your nervous system, recalibrate your energetic system, your emotional system, and start to experience the day much more in flow, where you can set clear boundaries, where you can create more space, where you can meet expectations without pushing, without going hard. Now, I know for some of the listeners, they'd be going, you need to talk to my CEO because that'll never work in my organization. The truth is there's lots of studies about middle management shifting culture without doing a big song and dance, without having to get permission from the CEO. Very simple. There was a large organization in the US where one of the middle managers was involved in recruitment, and he was a young African-American gentleman, and he realized that they didn't have a lot of diversity. This is going back about, 15, 20 years. And without any song and dance, without any hoo-ha, he was involved in recruitment for one department. He just intentionally started to select more diverse workers. And within a 10-year period, transformed the culture of that business. And so if you're a middle manager thinking, I don't have power here, I'm not C-suite, then just realize that you can influence the system. You can manage your own energetic system and get your outcomes. I'm not saying it's easy. It's simple for me to talk about. This takes commitment. It takes courage. It takes willingness. Yet more and more we're seeing that even the middle in organization can shift it. We know the top down is one of the most powerful ways to shift culture. But please realize you can influence the system if you're willing to do some self-inquiry.
Do you need to be more connected with yourself in order to be more present?
Yeah, the biggest thing I see, and this isn't just in the workplace and anyone with children, teenage children, and one of the programs I run is called From Distraction to Present. And what's occurred is that your biggest asset is your attention. Where your attention goes, energy flows. And for most of us, our attention is very scattered.
Yet we're in this Western world where it's all about distraction. We're being distracted, the number of emails, the social media, the phone, children on their computer games, the busyness. Yeah. And so once you learn, and these are very simple techniques, 10 minutes a day, to master your attention, you know, through the process of embodied presence, what happens is you realize that if I put my attention more on myself, then I become more connected with myself. And I can, from that place, connect more with my team. The three pillars of leadership is self-leadership, relational leadership, and systemic leadership. And unless you master self-leadership, connection with self, being present with self, yeah, getting to know self. Yeah, know how you show up. Know the impact you have when you walk into a room. Know the impact you have when you make decisions as a leader. If you can master that and realize that, you know, we are energetic systems, we're not just pinheads thinking, then you can move into relational presence, relational leadership, which is, the studies are really clear. Yeah, the most effective leaders, it's all about the relational field they create with their team and with the individuals. And when what I mean by that is that energetically, think about it for yourself, man. Think about any leader that you've enjoyed working with, any leader that you're aspired to. Yep. Usually they had a certain presence. There was a certain connection. There was a level of safety and vulnerability in that relationship. You can cultivate that from the inside out, no matter where you are in an organization. If you do that, you'll naturally become more present, more magnetic. Your communication will be clearer. Yeah, because most people are running the busy, distracted model. They're in their heads, their head bubble. Yeah, if your attention is scattered, your communication is scattered, your team is scattered, your outcomes are scattered, your life is scattered, good luck.
What is something that a relational leader does differently than somebody who's just like completely scattered?
When you understand presence, and I'm not talking executive presence as it's been bandied around, the ability to be present with yourself. And what you realize is, and I think the stats are there, you know, 70% of communication in an organization is mopping up miscommunication. Think about that email. Think about that quick conversation you had. Think about that to-do list where you're thinking about everything but being present. So one of the real outcomes I see with the clients I work with is, yep, their communication is so much more clear. Yep, and there are simple tools that I teach about really getting present, slowing it down, really getting the other person to connect and understand with what you're communicating. It saves so much time. Because again, you know that people, the email gets off your desk and suddenly it runs around the team for 3 days. Yeah, taking everybody's time. If we had an app that could do a cost analysis of the time we waste with miscommunication, everybody would be horrified. So just that alone, yeah, that real clear and concise communication from the place of presence and connection is a game changer.
And I'm thinking about a bunch of my friends and myself, busy leaders who are very distracted. And they might say, Bodhi, well, 10 minutes a day seems like too much. What is like the first thing they could do to just even take it a smaller step than that?
Yeah, and what I'd say is busyness is laziness. If you're running the busy model, I know it's confronting, yeah. But the truth is, because, you know, my generation, I'm in my 60s now, my generation, yeah, busyness was a badge of honor. If I wasn't the busiest in the team, if I didn't stay back the latest, then I wasn't lifting my weight. Yeah, I wasn't contributing. If you're running that badge of honor and think busyness is a measure of your productivity, a measure of your impact, and proving to everybody in the organization I'm the busiest, yeah, then you're the martyr and you're going to burn out and you're lazy. Yeah. We know multitasking is the least effective way to run your day. The neuroscience is clear. One interruption can take 20 minutes for the brain to recalibrate. And so if you can't find 10 minutes a day, yeah, then you're lazy. It's as simple as that. Yeah, and you're not serious about change. You know, as Einstein said, you know, definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. Now, to specifically answer your question, fundamentally what presence and connection is about spending time with yourself. Yeah, and I think that's a bigger challenge, particularly for the working parents, because we get up, we're on autopilot, we've got to get the kids to school, we've got to get to work, navigate the traffic, the train, the tube, whatever it might be. Yeah, and it feels like I don't have time. Yeah, and that's why one of the biggest challenges for people is, how do I find time? Yeah, 10 minutes a day. The reality is you have it. And it's interesting, and again, we won't go into it today. When we talk about values, your behavior is driven by your values. What you value, yeah, you will do. And so, Damien, if I offered you $1 million to find 10 minutes a day for the next month, yeah, would you do it?
Absolutely.
Exactly, exactly. And that's the challenge, because the thinking mind, 60,000 thoughts a day, most of them are negative. The thinking mind doesn't want to slow down. The limited ego doesn't want to slow down. It's going to push, it's going to kick, it's going to scream. It's going to, you don't have 10 minutes, you can't do 10 minutes. This doesn't work for me, this works for everybody else. So you're going to meet that resistance. Yeah. And the two trains that leave your house every morning, yeah, there's the flow train and the resistance train. Yeah. Which one do you want to get on?
Bodhi, it's hard to slow down. You know, it's hard. It's easy to keep yourself busy and going and thinking and moving. And, but it makes a big difference if you can. And I heard you talk a lot about the importance of reflection in this process.
Again, if we look at education and learning, and I know you do a lot in this space, what we know is that, again, everybody learns differently, yet the fundamentals of learning, if you think about the fundamentals of learning, first is the education piece. Yeah, we're given information. So I could learn everything there is about how to run a podcast. Yeah. But the next key is the application. We learn through the experience. I've got to run a podcast. I could understand how to do it all. Think of anything you've done in your life. We learn through the application. And so the learning process is education, application, integration. But the fundamental step in between is reflection. So again, if you look at a sporting analogy, you know, if you're a golfer, yeah, you go and hit the ball, but unless you step back and reflect and go, hang on a tick, how come I keep slicing it? What's going on here? This is why coaching, mentoring is important, because somebody can look at it and help you adjust. Otherwise, you just keep hitting the balls and hope it's going to get better. Yeah. And so in life, if you're not finding time to reflect, and as a leader, the studies are clear, the most effective leaders, yeah, at least once a day have a reflective practice. And what reflection means is the ability, yeah, to really assess the way you've showed up or the way you want to show up. And that reflective practice can be sitting in the garden with a cup of coffee, it can be prayer, it can be contemplation, it can be meditation, nature. These are all ways to reflect. You will not improve. The learning doesn't get embedded without reflection. Yeah, the ability to look at what's happening and adjust anything you feel you need to adjust.
Do you see a big difference between how women go about it than men?
Yeah, if we jump into masculine and feminine energy, and I know it's a sensitive topic, and just to give a little bit of context for the listeners. All traditional cultures knew that running through the universe, running through nature, were these different energies, which you could label masculine energy or feminine energy. Yeah. So it's not about gender. Yeah, we can talk about gender and gender fluidity. And essentially the feminine energy, the yin, the yang, you know, masculine, feminine, however you want to describe it, the feminine energy through the universe, the feminine energy in us is everything that flows, everything that moves. And the deep desire of the feminine energy is connection and love, connection and love, connection and love, constantly in flow, seeking connection and love. The masculine energy is that which witnesses the feminine. It's the consciousness that witnesses the feminine. So the feminine is like the ocean. It can be wild, it can be calm, it can be cool. Yeah. And the masculine is like the mountain. Yeah. Another way to describe it is the river is the feminine and the riverbanks is the masculine energy. And so if you take that into us as humans, most people are more in their feminine energy or their masculine energy. Yeah. And it's different to feminine and masculine traits, which is another conversation. So to answer your question, a woman who's in her feminine energy, if you, just a simple example, if you look at the way the feminine wants to solve a problem, yeah, the feminine talks it out. The feminine will talk to her girlfriends, to whoever it is. They don't want the solution, but they want to talk it out because they're looking for the connection. They want to unpack it. That's a form of reflection. That's a form of unpacking. Yeah. The masculine will go to his cave and basically try to work it out himself. Yeah. So again, very simple, simplistic answer, but that's the different energies in us and often the different energies in gender. That's just the different ways we respond. Does that help?
Absolutely. It makes me think of my own situation. Now, for instance, when there's a problem, I want to just jump in and find a way to fix it. And what my wife does, Bodhi, is she doesn't want me to fix it. What she wants is for me to be there and listen to her while she talks it through. And that helps her process and eventually move in a direction to fix the whatever the problem is.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the unpacking. That's the process for the feminine energy in us. Talk it through, bounce it around, unpack it, feel it, connect. Yeah. And, you know, such a simple distinction. And as you say, in primary relationships, you know, and again, such an important thing and such common feedback, you know, working with couples and even in business. What's fascinating in business when we look at the masculine and feminine energy, and I know a lot of women have felt they have to access more masculine energy in corporate, in the workplace. And when I do work with teams and really start to unpack this, yeah, it's fascinating how unconscious men are of their impact on the team, particularly with the women. Yeah, they just literally don't know what they don't know. And if there's no safe space for feedback, yeah, the feminine doesn't feel seen, the feminine doesn't feel heard, the feminine doesn't feel like they've got their own space, their own real estate.
Can you give an example of what we're discussing right here?
An example is, and again, please, these are huge generalizations for the listeners. So
no, I get sure it. Yeah.
Yeah, there's many exceptions to the rule. In a team meeting, yeah, you'll notice in a team meeting, it's a common occurrence is that, you know, one of the women in their feminine, yeah, will come up with a suggestion and an idea. It will not be taken on. Yeah. They will not feel seen and heard. But by the end of the meeting, one of the men will claim that idea and there will be action on that idea. Yeah. And again, we'll put in the show notes the name of this book that was birthed. This lady was a leading scientist working in corporate America. And basically did a whole presentation around a solution for a problem they were challenged with. You know, got the claps and thank you for the presentation. The meeting went on. At the end of the meeting, the CEO claimed the same idea and made it his. Yeah, but that happens and men don't even realize.
So how can women stay in their feminine while leveraging some of these masculine traits, I guess you'd say, in a particular situation like this?
Yeah, great question. And, you know, when I work with women in business, so the key thing to know is, again, most people, most men are more in their masculine energy and most women are more in their feminine energy. And what happens is that when you realize that there's a difference between your feminine energy, which is all about flow, which is all about connection, which is all about movement, yeah, to the feminine and masculine traits. So if we think of the masculine traits is all about linear thinking. It's all about strategy.
It's a very different relationship to space, time, spreadsheets, those sorts of things, analysis. They're all the masculine traits. It's not masculine energy. Yeah. The feminine, yeah, the feminine deals with complexity. The feminine deals with collaboration. The feminine deals with being able to hold multiple agendas. So these traits, so if you're a woman in corporate America, yeah, if you can hold your feminine energy and absolutely access your strategic thinking, access your analytical thinking. Yeah, these are superpowers that we all have, but you don't have to become more masculine in your energy. And it's the same for men, you know, as we see more collaboration. You know, one of the conferences I ran recently in Paris was around the future of male leadership. One of the biggest things for male leadership is how do we truly collaborate as men? Because men often operate in silos, operate in linear, and collaboration is a feminine trait. And any father like yourself who has children, you know when you can lean into your feminine traits. Yeah, that connection, that empathy, that compassion for your children. Yeah, but you still stand in your masculine energy. And that's a practice. It's actually easier than people think. We just haven't been taught it. There's some simple processes where people can access their inherent energy and the traits they need to navigate their role, whatever they may be.
So people are probably listening to Bodhi right now and they're saying, hey, this sounds great, but also it either could come across as weakness. And some men, Bodhi, don't know how to be vulnerable in the sense to tap into their feminine traits more to take advantage of it. What advice do you have for them?
And, you know, as we know, vulnerability, you know, has got many, many different interpretations. What sits behind vulnerability is authenticity. Yeah. And what sits behind authenticity, yeah, is being true to yourself. Yeah. Being honest with yourself. So, you know, I did a podcast recently about why men don't do the work. Yeah. And one of the biggest reasons why men don't do the work is they kind of don't want to be honest with themselves. Yeah. They don't really want to sit there and go, you know what? This isn't working for me. You know what? I wish I knew a different way. Yeah. And so if you want to lean into this work, yeah, one of the first steps, find some nature, go for a walk. Yeah. And just start connecting with yourself and start being honest with yourself. Is the current paradigm you're working in working, you know, for your career, for your family, for your children? And once you know, change comes from inspiration or desperation. Regrettably, a lot of people get brought to their knees before they change, whether it's health, whether it's relationship, those sorts of things. I want to inspire people.
Why do you think men have a more difficult time being honest with themselves?
Well, again, you know, remember the feminine energy is about connection, connection and love, connection and love. So the feminine energy innately wants to connect. Yeah, the masculine energy, the driver of the masculine energy is freedom. So what we think unconsciously is that freedom is about sitting on the mountaintop. Freedom is about going to India to an ashram. We think freedom is outside of ourselves. Yeah. And so we're searching for this freedom, yeah, but we're looking at it outside ourselves. And then most men would say, I get a great sense of freedom when I'm on my own in nature. Yeah. And so that's the innate driver. It's antithetical then for men to go, okay, I've got to really be willing to lean in and be honest with myself. If you couple that with the cultural narrative around men, as you know, little boys don't cry, you've got to man up, you don't be vulnerable, it's weakness. You think about everything we go through at school and college, about bullying, about isolation, all of these things influence, yep. Most people live their lives, Damon, based on fear. And this paradigm shift that we're seeing globally is how can I live a life of really loving myself instead of fear? Yeah, fear around my role, fear around, you know, my career, fear around my mortgage. And the fundamental fear that drives every human being I met is I'm not good enough.
And do you think some of that comes from, as I sit here listening to you, is what men consider as role models when it comes to leadership?
Yeah, if you look at the way we learn, yeah, and particularly as men,
You know, with whom you mix, so shall you be. So if you think of, you know, and again, I know a lot of your listeners are in the US, think about the trajectory for middle class, upper middle class US boy. Yeah. It's very stereotypical. Yeah. That, you know, they're going to go to school, that sport is valued a lot more over creativity, art, music. These are generalizations. Yeah. If you're not the alpha, if you're not good at sport, you're already becoming marginalized. Yeah. Then we've got the academic performance, which will take you in different strands. And then if you join an organization, the leadership paradigm is you go hard, you don't show weakness. Yeah. Basically, it's all about competition, not collaboration. Yeah. It's all about get ahead as fast as you can. Yeah, and same with VCs and entrepreneurs, you know, working with a lot of founders. You know, the VC pressure, the private equity pressure is huge. It's like, guys, you know, I've got some senior guys who get so much pressure when they go, I want to make sure the team's happy. The message is, don't worry if they're happy, just get them to perform. So that's the leadership model. And what I'm noticing, Damon, and I'll be interested how where it lands for you is, you know, men your age and a little bit younger are going, I want it to be different. Yeah, no one told me it could be different. And the men I work with are going, is there a different way? And I know there is a different way. I've got hundreds and hundreds of men globally who are leading differently in organizations, founders, those things. It's just that willingness to shift the paradigm, step out of the comfort zone.
I think for me, Bodhi, I see it on both sides. As far as the network of friends that I have, some of them are very hard drivers, you know, like they're extremely type A personalities, incredibly competitive, and they want to work 60, 70 hours a week. And on the other side of the fence, you have men similar to what you're speaking about, who want to build deeper connection with their wives and their families and be there for their team. And so I think that there's a healthy mix, or maybe not a healthy mix, but there's a big mix out there still. But I think it's, and I'm curious to see what you think about this. I think it's definitely been shifting over the past 30 years. Wouldn't you say that it's more, people are more open to moving in this direction of less burnout, not having to be hard drivers than you would say when we got started, say 30 years ago?
Yeah, the biggest thing that's struggling to shift are the systems from within which we work. Yeah. And again, you know, working with CEOs and leaders, if we are willing to shift the system, when I say system, the organizational structure, yeah, of a corporate or the expectations of a VC. So I agree, individuals are going, I want it to be different. Individuals are starting to lean in. Some of them are leaving those systems because it's very difficult in those systems. Yet my encouragement and inspiration, you know, to your generation is, you know, so many people like yourselves, and certainly working globally, so many guys in their late 40s are going, we're actually going to be the leaders very soon. You know, the guys 60 plus are stepping down. And the real opportunity and challenge is, can we be the head of an organization and create different systems? Because the organizational structure, if we go back to the masculine and the feminine, if you think about any typical org chart, and I'm kind of describing a pyramid here for those who are listening, yet the organizational charts for most organizations were actually designed for war. Yeah, it's about a general manager. It's about a CEO. It's a top-down model. Somebody's got to be in charge. Yeah, and that's very masculine, and it's also very easily distorted, yeah, through power and influence. And so what we're seeing is that the feminine energy in organizational structures sits in circles. You know, there are more and more co-CEOs which have come. And, you know, that comes with its own challenges. It's more about collaboration. It's more about a leadership team. It's more about decision making. You know, everybody has a voice. And so my sense is that as more leaders, yeah, particularly men, want it to be different, if they're willing to really challenge the structures of organizations, yeah, then I really am hopeful that we can find this elusive work-life balance, this flow, these deep connections, change the paradigm of leadership, change the paradigm of structures. And there's plenty of evidence out there, yeah, where this is happening. It's still in the minority for sure.
Well, the command and control style of leadership, studies show, buddy, it just doesn't work anymore. Yet, if you look at it, when I had Stephen M. R. Covey on our show, he said 80% of organizations, for one reason or another, still have a command and control type of leadership. Maybe they just don't know how to get out of it. But what I hear you saying is that hopefully, as you know, some of the leaders maybe retire and move on, that the younger individuals in their 30s and 40s who are stepping up into leadership roles can make that shift.
Exactly. And again, you know, when I was in London recently, I ran a workshop for CEOs around the masculine and feminine energy in business. And it was eye-opening for the men. Like any listener who's in an influential role, if you really want to learn more about the way the masculine and feminine energy operates in your business, yeah, not just in gender, yeah, but also in your business and in your structures, yeah, it is a game changer. And it's an area that we're scared to tread because there's so much fear around gender, around diversity, around equality, around gender fluidity, that I believe it is one of the next frontiers in organizations. Is let's have an open conversation about the masculine and feminine energy, how it works in our organization. Let's take gender out of it. Let's take a lot of those fears out of it. Yeah. And it really is, for me, it's so exciting when I get leadership teams who are willing to have this conversation because it's just eye-opening. Remember, we don't know what we don't know. So many young white men have no idea. The unconscious bias is huge as to the experience of people of diversity, women, those sorts of things.
Before you can look at it as far as from an organization where the energy is masculine or feminine, how does somebody start inward and identify where they're really at on the spectrum when it comes to their energies?
Yeah, and I think it does come back to that, the willingness to put a little bit of time aside to start reflecting. And, you know, the journey typically, if you think about, and perhaps for yourself and your peer group, and I'm gonna talk about men who are predominantly in their masculine energy. And so we know that a lot of men typically will lean into health and fitness as a way to move their energy, you know, whether it's triathlons, whether it's going to the gym, action, you know, that action sort of, and it has its place. It can help slow the mind down. It can help you feel better. Obviously, there's a lot of physical benefit. And anybody in that space, what I would say to you is that if you can, again, carve out some time to, instead of being action, being still, yeah, there's plenty of information now that you can access around the masculine, feminine energy, around starting to understand how you operate. You know, one of the biggest things, and, you know, having worked with leadership teams around the globe, and whether it's in your leadership team or in your relationships at home, one of the keys is how do we create safe and honest feedback? You know, give it to me in the heart, don't give it to me in the back. You know, the most successful team, this whole conversation, I know you've had guests talk about psychological safety, emotional safety, yeah, which all comes from vulnerability. It all comes from the ability, yeah, to give honest feedback. The only way you perform, again, if you look at a sporting team, yeah, the only way a sporting team's going to perform is if there's some way of getting feedback. If you keep dropping the ball, I'm not going to pass it to you anymore. Yeah. But in organizations, it's not easy. And so what I'd say to answer your question, if you're a man, is get some feedback. Get some feedback. Get some feedback. Honest, safe feedback from your wife, from your team, from your men, from your friends. You know, like be willing to hear the feedback about how you present in the world.
In order to create psychological safety, you believe that compassion has a lot to do with it, right?
And, you know, that vulnerability work. Yeah. Yeah. If you think about it, so the four pillars for the future of male leadership, yeah, one is connection. Yeah. One is collaboration, one is compassion, and the other is curiosity. Yeah. So if we just unpack that a little bit again, think about any leader that you know. And this isn't just for male leadership, but I think it's important for male leaders. If you meet a leader who's connected with himself, connected with you, who's genuinely willing to collaborate, yeah, who's parking his agenda, win at all costs, my idea, and has compassion. And we'll talk more compassion for self, compassion for other. Yep. And a genuine curiosity in you, a curiosity in the problem, the challenge. How would that leader be, Damon, if you worked with that leader?
I tend to find that the best leaders are very curious. And when they are very curious, Bodhi, people feel heard and they feel respected and actually really listened to.
Exactly. And back to that connection. You know, good leaders create leaders. Yeah. And so the compassion piece, which you asked, if you think of the journey yet to reconnecting with self, one of the first entry points is the ability for self-acceptance. You know, and obviously in personal development, spiritual development, we hear a lot about loving yourself. Yeah. And all of these have slightly different frequencies. And so if you really did 5-minute reflection and go, do I accept myself unconditionally? Yeah. And this isn't about, you know, not correcting behavior that may be inappropriate, you know, accepting inappropriate behavior, but can I accept that I'm doing the best I can? Yeah. That I am valuable and lovable just as I am. Once you start doing that, you start to experience a little bit more self-love. And from there, you start to experience more compassion for yourself. Yeah, and obviously the Buddhist work is you know, a centerpiece for compassion, heart-centered compassion. Once you start to have compassion for yourself, you think about acceptance, love, and compassion, you start to realize that at the end of the day, there's a part of you that is whole and complete. There's a part of you, yeah, that is love. And you've got children. So when your children are born, Damon, what did you see? What did you meet? Yep. When you met your children, you look at your eyes light up.
It was an experience that, unlike any other. It just blew me away, and you just had this rush of joy. But also, you feel a little bit scared. If I'm going to be honest, I'm like, how am I going to take care of, keep them alive, support them? I mean, it's a huge responsibility. But there's nothing better.
And often parents tell me when they see the newborn, they just see love. They just see innocence. They see perfection. Yeah. We don't look at a newborn and go, bloody hell, you got work to do.
But I think that's part of the challenge, because when kids are young, when children are young, buddy, they're okay with making mistakes. They're okay with failing. And that kind of gets beaten out of them as you get older, right? You know, I mean, people stop taking chances. They stop getting out of their comfort zone because of the fear that you mentioned earlier that is the number one thing out there, because people don't want to be embarrassed, or they don't want to feel bad, or they get bullied. And it's such a shame that when you go back to being a child, they're willing to try anything because they're not worried about, you know, you see perfect, but, you know, they're not worried about making mistakes.
And that innocence and love that you see with a newborn is still within everybody. There's still a part of you that your essence is love.
So how do you bring it back?
Exactly. This is the work I teach. Yeah. Because to your point about the fear of making mistakes and everything, yeah, the inner critic, the not good enough, yeah, is the biggest one you've got to start shifting.
Limiting beliefs,
you know, I've had clients say to me, if I had a friend who came to lunch every day and spoke to me the way I talk to myself, I'd never ask them back. Like, when you start getting present with yourself and noticing those thoughts, 60,000 thoughts a day, most of them are negative, you realize I am just brutal on myself. Yeah, I'm not good enough, not tall enough, not smart enough, not thin enough, not whatever, wealthy enough. And so to get back to that part of you, it's actually quicker than you think, and then it just takes practice to retain it, yeah? But what it means is you've got to cut through the inner chatter, cut through the noise, Yeah. And then come back to your essence, come back to the part of you that is whole and complete. Yeah. And this is where a lot of personal development and self-help kind of got tricked up, I think, because a lot of people, you know, me included, think when I do this course, when I learn how to meditate, when I learn how to, then I'll be whole and complete. And it still puts it outside of you. I know people who are still doing personal development courses waiting to be whole and complete. And that never comes, of course. When you realize that I am whole and complete, there's a part of me that is love now. And I want to grow and develop and learn by doing this course, by doing this leadership training or whatever. It's a very different energy. And it's one of the foundations of what I teach is, let's come back to the part of you that's whole and complete. Let's start building that relationship now. There's nothing to fix. There's no problem. Yeah. When you connect with that, the rest is just about growth. You know, I often say, you know, Roger Federer had a coach right until the end. Yeah, it wasn't because he was, you know, stuffed up and had lots of problems. It's because he wanted to keep getting better. And that's, you know, any of the listeners who are hesitant about reaching out for support, you know, coaching support, whatever it might be, just realize the only way you can grow and learn, yeah, is to have somebody reflect back to you and support you. And whatever you want to grow in, leadership training, relationship training, personal training, we get a coach for our, you know, those sorts of things. But remember, you're already whole and complete. We've just made up this story that we're not good enough, that we're not lovable and not valuable.
You're never really complete in the sense that the learning journey never stops. You know, I think that there's always more to learn and grow and evolve. But on the other hand, what I hear you saying, which I agree with, is we got to find ways to love ourselves and you know, give ourselves, I like to say a lot of times, try things out, buddy. And if you fail, at least give yourself a pat on the back because you tried. A lot of people aren't willing to stick their neck out and even take a chance.
Yeah. And, you know, when you work with comfort zones, you know, and again, as we know, when you get to the edge of a comfort zone, yeah, it gets uncomfortable. And the uncomfortable is typically the emotions. And the predominant emotion is fear. And fear, F-E-A-R, stands for false expectations appearing real. Yeah. So we project all of these expectations about what's going to happen if I step out of my comfort zone. I'm going to fail. I'm going to be criticized. I'm going to be not good enough. Yeah. And then we just withdraw into my comfort zone. And now for men on the hero's journey, yeah, and the hero's journey is slightly different to the heroine's journey. The hero's journey is you've got to be leaning into that edge and it never stops. This is where we feel alive. This is where we bring the best version of ourselves. Now, it's not being extreme with your comfort zone. In flow states, they talk about 4%. Yeah, about 4%. Lean into 4% growth regularly. But I agree. I see a lot of people who just want to go back into their comfort zone, back into their habits. Yeah, life becomes autopilot.
Now, I know you do a lot of work with all of this, but what is one piece of practical advice that you give our listener that they could help take that first step to get out of their comfort zone?
Go to nature. Yeah. And just spend a bit of time with yourself. And that will be uncomfortable for a lot of people. Not hard adventure, not, you know, 50K hike. Yeah, just find somewhere where you can just spend a bit of quality being time with yourself. What will occur, again, if you cultivate this, firstly, you'll start to notice the inner critic. Yeah, one of the first steps on the journey is the witnessing. Yeah. Once you notice the inner critic, you'll start to realize how hard you've been on yourself. Secondly, you may start to notice some feelings, some emotions. And remember, my emotions aren't good or bad. It's just energy and motion. Yeah, you'll start to notice a bit of frustration. You'll start to notice a bit of fear. Yeah. And so just that in itself will take you out of your comfort zone. Because again, most people are on autopilot. As you say, a lot of high achievers don't take time to stop and reflect. And the other simple one, you know, for those obviously who can't, you know, and when I say nature, even the local park, you know, somewhere nearby. The other simple one really is, like, if there's anywhere where you can find some quiet space, you know, before the kids get up, or, you know, after they go to bed, and just sit, you know, sit with a cup of tea, sit with yourself, and just don't reach for the phone. You know, one of the great things, you know, that I think it's Joe Dispenza talks about, you want to train the mind, train the body. Yeah. And what he says is that it's like training a dog. Just teach your body to sit still for 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day with no distraction, no devices. Yep. And you just get, just sit. Any listener, just do that for 5 minutes a day. Your thinking mind will kick and scream. They'll have every reason not to. The truth is you have 5 minutes. And if you just train yourself to find somewhere in the house where you can sit for 5 minutes without distractions, yep, you will start creating a different relationship with yourself.
When you first get started, though, Bodhi, you have these thoughts that come in your mind and you start getting busy again. But you got to find a way to push those thoughts out, right? If you want to just be able to sit.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyone who's done a meditation retreat, a lot of people, it amplifies, because you don't realize how busy that noise is until you stop. And I get some people go, oh, meditation's not for me. My mind's too busy. It must be easier for other people. It's not easy for anybody. Yeah, the thing with it, you know, it's like if you go to the gym 3 times and think you're fit. You know, like you got to persist. You got to be consistent. That's why 5 minutes a day, just sitting still, noticing those thoughts. And the key there is not to judge the thoughts, not you beat yourself up because you have the thoughts. Some people think meditation is about not thinking. Yeah, and it's not the case. What happens is the gap between the thoughts gets bigger. Yeah, as you slow it down, it's a little bit like if you were gonna slow a fast train down. Yet you don't jump in front of it and go stop. Yet you slow it down. Yeah. So your thinking mind is like a fast train. Don't think you got to go cold turkey. Yeah. It's like just slow it down. And as those thoughts arise, you know, there are many great apps now, but you know, one of the simple things, if you think of them like clouds in the sky, they will come and they will go. Thoughts inherently aren't real. They're just energetic construct. There's nothing real about a thought. It's this energetic construct that arises. What you do with it is your choice. Yeah, that's why in traditional cultures, you know, Zen Buddhism, all they do is say, come back to your breath. Yeah, notice the thought like a cloud. Let it go. Come back to your breath. Come back to your nostrils. Come back to your breath. Simple ways to start to master your attention. Yeah, and you'll start to slow that train down. You start to experience the gap between the thoughts a little bit. And a lot of my clients say, you know, because it's quite subtle when you start, what they say is that I didn't realize how beneficial it was until I stopped for a couple of days and went back to the old me. Yeah. And so anybody who's interested, if you just do a little bit each day, it's not a profound, enlightened experience necessarily. But if you build on it, you know, if you take a day or two off, you'll notice I'm rattier, I'm more distracted, I'm more irritable, I'm reacting more. Yeah, because you haven't developed that inner calm. And the difference for the listeners, mindfulness is a great entry point, and I highly recommend there's lots of great mindfulness practices, teachers, apps. The difference between mindfulness and embodied presence is that mindfulness, you start to witness the thoughts. And some of the practices are a bit transcendent. They kind of take you away from your body. But I encourage any of the listeners, once you start this, is learn how to be embodied and present. Yeah, and you can connect with yourself, self-leadership. You can create the relational field. There's a thing called entrainment, you know, any of the musicians out there, what happens energetically, if you think about a drum circle, if somebody starts drumming, and then everybody starts to get into the same rhythm. That's entrainment. The frequency and vibration starts to entrain. And that's what happens with leadership. That's what happens with your children. If your children's really scattered and upset and having a tantrum, if you're grounded and present, the relational feel calms them down. It starts to settle them down. The studies are clear. It doesn't matter what modality you do in your leadership, your healing, yeah, whether it's breath work, whether it's meditation, whether it's yoga, whether it's leadership development. The key one denominator that changes it all is the quality of the relational field that the teacher or the facilitator creates. Yeah, if they're present and create a safe relational field, that's where the healing occurs. That's where the leadership growth occurs. That's entrainment. That's where the frequency and vibration starts to align.
What is an example of massive change that you've seen in somebody you've worked with? Doesn't matter who it is, but just in general, that somebody started with you, they were, you know, busy, maybe they weren't present. Fast forward, let's say 6 months to a year, what's been some of the massive change you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, there's many, many examples. I would say that, again, the three pillars that I teach, particularly for men, is presence, purpose, and passion for life. And so when I work one-on-one, when I work in group with leaders, the transformational work that I've seen is so many leaders say, I am so much more present with my children. I'm so much more present with my beloved. I'm so much more present with my team. Yeah, I've set boundaries. I'm not as distracted. The other is I'm absolutely clear on my purpose. Yeah. And when a man's clear on his purpose, a man without purpose is like a boat without a rudder. Yeah. When you're clear and really understand what purpose is. Yeah. And then passion is passion for life. Yeah. The big thing, what I say is it's not about doing what brings you joy. It's about bringing joy to what you do. You know, you can cultivate joy. When you're running a business, there's some things that aren't your superpower. Bring joy to it. When you're playing with your children. I had one client, to answer your question. He used to find the weekends really challenging because he felt he had all these chores to do and then he had to organize the kids. And just after two sessions, he transformed it and realized he got to bring joy to his weekends. He said, I've never been closer to my daughter. I love Saturdays now. We have so much fun together. I take her to sport. We do stuff together. Just that shift, Damon, is a game changer.
That is a game changer.
Yeah.
So, Bodhi, you've got children. You've got grandchildren. I've got young kids. With the work you're doing and the work that I'm trying to do at Learn It, what are you hoping the world's going to look like in a decade or so when it comes to leadership?
Yeah, I feel, again, if we follow some of the threads we've spoken about, I feel... And there's, you know, the B Corp movement, which is, you know, the big in Europe and also in the US, yeah, is very much about people, planet, profit. So if we really start to change the paradigm and put people first, yeah, and, you know, obviously the planet is interrelated with that. We're not separate from the planet. Yeah. You know, my hope, my dream, what I'm observing is that if we really come together in a collaborative space, in organizations, in systems, yep, and really realize that all of us fundamentally want the same thing. Yeah. And if we change the model to putting people first, putting our people first, giving people a sense of autonomy, trusting people, making sure systemically we're doing what's appropriate, the impact on the planet, the impact on the community. Yeah. The profit's the byproduct. The profit's an outcome. Yeah. And it does take collaboration. It does take courage. Yeah, it does take commitment. Yet I feel innate in so many people is we know the current model just isn't sustainable.
Wonderful, Bodhi. I mean, we had such a wonderful conversation. We talked about everything about the importance of being present, connection and direction, and how you got to start with yourself, whether it's self-compassion or connection, and how the way things are today, leadership-wise especially, is just not sustainable and the shift that we have to make. So thank you so much for sharing all your wisdom with us. Where can we connect with you at online?
Yeah, if you know, the website, www.bodhialdridge.com. There's also my own podcast called True Freedom. It's on all the podcast apps. Please have a look at that. I've done three series now. It covers a lot of these topics. And if anyone wants to reach out You know, feel free, contact you. It may sound difficult. It may sound overwhelming, yet please know it is simpler than you think. You've just got to step out of that comfort zone. You've just got to make a move.
We're going to put a lot of this in the show notes. I want to double down on what you said. I went through your podcast. I think this latest season has about 9 or 10 lessons. It's super invaluable. So listeners, please check that out. Do me a favor, rate and review the show. And I really want you to think about somebody that's super busy and maybe distracted and text them this episode, because I know they'll get value out of it. And until next time, everybody, please stay curious and keep learning. Have a great day.